Public radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org/protect.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. A nationwide program to help America's gardens has left an impact on gardens throughout Columbus and Franklin County. The Franklin County Master Gardeners have contributed more than 30,000 hours of volunteering to local gardens. They provide vital physical work and support 69 community gardens, including vegetable gardens, and they donate crops back to the food bank. Their handiwork is also on display many places around Central Ohio, including the Park of Roses, Franklin Park Conservatory, COSI, and more. But what is a Master Gardener, and how do you become one? Joining me now to talk about the Master Gardener program are Master Gardeners. We have Mike Hogan, Extension Educator for Agriculture and Natural Resources and Associate Professor at Ohio State University. Mike is also the coordinator of the Master Gardener Volunteer Program here in Franklin County. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you. Morning.
Sounds like you're very busy. I got all those titles. And then we also have in the studio with us Karen Minnendorf, a OSU Master Gardener Volunteer. Welcome, Karen.
Welcome. Thank you.
And Kathy Watson, an OSU Master Gardener and Volunteer. Welcome, Kathy.
Great. Thank you. Welcome.
So, Mike, let's start with you. How does one become a Master Gardener?
Well, we have a new training program that we teach for 3 months every other year. And we're recruiting new Master Gardener volunteers right now. The program takes about 13 or 14 months from start to finish. And so we only offer it every other year. And so we typically have a waiting list of folks that want to get into the class. Our classes will start next January. Applications will be due this August. It involves a college level type of gardening and horticulture class that goes every Friday for 8 hours a day. We break many educational principles by keeping folks in one place for 8 hours. And then after that, they take a final exam. Sounds threatening to some folks that may have been out of school for a while, but nobody's ever failed. Nobody's ever washed out of the class. And then after that, they spend the next about 9 months interning. And they do intern volunteer hours, learning and helping at gardening projects. And then they graduate the following January and become full-fledged Master Gardener volunteers.
Wow. And so I have two people in the studio with me who went through that whole process, Kathy and Karen. Kathy, do you want to start? What made you decide to commit every Friday for 8 hours? And why did you want to become a Master Gardener?
Sure. I had been a volunteer at Chadwick Arboretum at OSU, and probably for about 10 years before I became a Master Gardener. But most of those volunteers are Master Gardeners, and so that's where I found out what a Master Gardener is. They were very knowledgeable, they were like really interesting, and they all seemed to be having a lot of fun. So that I was a nurse at the time, so I was retiring in 2022. And so I thought, that's what I'm going to be when I retire. And so I had always liked planting things and growing things. But the Master Gardener program was much more than that. It was way better than I thought it was going to be. So it really filled up a lot of my time, because it's not just planting, but it's learning new things, and it's teaching other people, the community, the youth, and it was just way better than I thought it was going to be.
And Karen, what about you? Why did you want to become a Master Gardener?
So we had always, since I was a child, we've gardened at our house with my parents. If my parents went outside, you went outside. So I have always enjoyed being outside in the garden. And I am a obituary reader. So many years ago, I read someone's obituary that said he was a Franklin County Master Gardener, and I had never knew that program existed. And when I looked it up, I was still working. There was too much. I couldn't do the commitments that you needed while I was still working. So after I retired from the county, I just missed getting in the class of 2016. And so I enjoy going out, and I mostly work with children. And then we also have the continuing education aspect, and I really like doing the continuing education.
So, Mike, the continuing education, so you keep educating your master gardeners past the initial program?
We do. After when someone becomes a master gardener, they have a commitment that every year they will give back a minimum of 25 hours of volunteer service. Mm-hmm. Most of our master gardeners give hundreds per year. We just had our yearly awards recognition program, and we have master gardeners that give up to 500 hours a year. You know, we also mm-hmm. recognize lifetime, you know, how many hours they've given. We have people with 5,000 and 6,000 hours. It's just unbelievable the dedication of these community volunteers. But we also require master gardeners every year to get a minimum of 10 hours of continuing education, mm-hmm. which is fairly easy in a large city that has a lot of interest and institutions around gardening, like Franklin Park Conservatory and the Ohio State University College of Food, Ag, and Environmental Sciences. And then technology has changed so much that we have access to so many more continuing education programs, you know, online and through tapes and things like that. Continuing it is really one of the core principles of the Master Gardener program. It's not one and done. We don't learn everything we need to know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's an ongoing process. You know, certainly science changes, nature changes. The Master Gardener program is a science-based, outcomes-based, research-based program. And we have a lot of our Master Gardeners that engage in research. They conduct research. Some of it is citizen research, citizen-led research. Some of it is being part of larger research projects, mostly because we're right in the on campus. Here in Columbus. Some of our counterparts throughout the state don't have that same ability to connect with researchers. Mm-hmm. And we have master gardeners, the analytical types, that just really enjoy being part of that research part.
Now, most of the people who take the class, are they like Kathy and Karen, who retired and decided this was their next act?
So that's the way it was until about 10 years ago, where we looked at the average age of Master Gardener volunteers, and we really had a very strategic approach to trying to diversify the program in all aspects of diversity, but age was one of the big ones. And so we made a few changes in some of our projects so that we had volunteer activities in the evenings. You know, sometimes that works out better, you know, because of weather and you know, things like that, and also on the weekends. And so we have a lot more Master Gardener volunteers today in our classes that we train that are still working. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, you have to have the flexibility in your employment to be able to get every Friday off for 3 months, January through March. But we've had folks that work for employers like companies that see that as a benefit, that recognize the volunteer component, that encourage their employees to give back to the community, even on company time. So we have lots of folks that are able to negotiate that. We've had teachers who are able to have been able to come on their professional time. So we always try to help folks with their employer if we can. Mm-hmm. But many employers see the community benefit of the program and will work with their employees to let them participate.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich, and we're talking about the Franklin County Master Gardener Volunteer Program this hour. Mike Hogan is with us, Extension Educator for Agriculture and Natural Resources. He's also an Associate Professor at Ohio State University. And we also have Karen Middendorf and Kathy Watson, both Master Gardeners, both volunteers with the program. So let's talk about your volunteer efforts. I mentioned at the beginning that Master Gardeners have donated 30,000 hours of work just last year, and you can value that work at nearly $1 million. So, Mike, does that figure come from if you would hire a professional gardener?
Exactly. There's okay. a National Volunteerism Center, and every year they put a dollar value on volunteer work, and that is exactly what you say, Amy. It's if someone had to go out and hire somebody to do that. And we had a Master Gardener on sick leave towards the end of the year, this past year, and she didn't get to report her hours. And about 2 weeks ago, she came back off a sick leave, and she said, "Can I still report my hours from last year?" I said, "Absolutely, please do." And when she did that, it put us over $1 million with her added hours. and it was the first year that's happened. Our impact was $1.04 million last year. Statewide, Master Gardeners statewide, we have 69 different county Master Gardener programs throughout Ohio. And statewide, that value of that service statewide was $6.1 million, but a sixth of that, $1.04 million, was here in Franklin mm-hmm. County. And our stakeholders, like our county commissioners who help fund OSU Extension, they really like seeing that because they really understand that impact.
So, Karen, let's start with you. There's a whole long list of the gardens that you all work in volunteer your time. Do you have a favorite?
My favorite would be the 4-H spin gardens, which that's special interest. Mm-hmm. So I work with the volunteer with the elementary school age students. Mm-hmm. and I do three different spin gardens. So there's one in Wallace, which is in Grandview. Mm-hmm. I do one at the Prairie Township Community Center. And then I have a year-round program that I co-chair at the Lincoln Village Youth and Community Center. And the students from Prairie Lincoln Elementary come over. And if I'm allowed to brag,
yes,
of course. Just won the 2024 award for community gardens for a large Master Gardener program.
Congratulations.
So we were very happy about that.
When you say spin garden, what's a spin garden mean?
So it's spin special interest, so the SP from special IN. It has to be at least an 8-week course. Mm. You meet once a week. And we have a designated curriculum that we teach to the students so that they can learn how to garden and have their own gardens at home. And then what we grow in our gardens, the children take that home to their families.
Oh, so if you're growing fruits or vegetables, they take that home? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
What's the favorite thing that the kids take home?
Mouse melons.
Oh, I don't even know what that is. Is that okay? Am I supposed to know what that is?
No.
Fairly new.
Think of it, it's about the size of a grape.
Okay.
But it's colored like a watermelon, so it's got that green with a little white stripe.
Okay.
But it tastes like a cucumber, a sweeter cucumber.
Oh, wow.
So it's sometimes referred to as a...
Cucamelon.
Cucamelon, as a Mexican gherkin, but it's about the size of a grape. And the kids love to go out and they pull all of those and they can eat them right there. We do not use any kind of chemicals in the garden. Mm-hmm. So the kids can just pull them and eat them right there.
Wow.
And they love those. That's the biggest hit in all three gardens.
Okay. I'm going to go... What did you call them again? I'm writing that down.
Mouse melons.
Mouse melons. Okay. I'm going to find me some mouse melons. Okay. Kathy, what is your favorite garden that you've worked in?
Well, I do work with Karen at the 4-H Spin Gardens, but I guess my favorite is probably the Ross Heart Hospital Garden. Mm. So it's a garden that's right outside the door of the OSU Extension Office, and it's sponsored by the OSU Ross Heart Hospital. It's a program for people who have cardiac problems and their families that help them and cook for them. And it's really a two-part program. During the growing season, they come in person to the extension office where we have a demonstration kitchen. And one of the OSU dietitians teaches them something every week about cooking with vegetables and healthy cooking and improving your health. And Master Gardeners also have a times where they teach the participants in the program about gardening activities. So maybe it's container gardening or something like that. Mm-hmm. But then when the education part's done, they walk out and we invite them out to our garden. And we have an 82-bed raised bed garden. And we teach them about the vegetables. They talk to us about the vegetables. We show them how to harvest. And then everybody goes home with a bag full of fresh vegetables and ideas about how to use them when they get home.
82 beds.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It is a lot.
Oh my goodness. Do you go there every day or do you have a rotating?
We have regular work sessions 3 days a week, but we start planning, you know, in the wintertime about, you know, what are we going to plant? The participants in the program give us ideas about what they would like to see in the garden as well as some of the topics they would like to hear about education-wise. So it's a pretty much an all-year thing.
Do you grow mouse melons too?
We haven't, but we are this year. We've got the seeds.
All right, great. So, Mike, this is amazing. I mean, the both of these programs that they just said were their favorite, but there's so many more. You brought me a list of all of the gardens that the Franklin County Master Gardeners volunteers work in. Do you have a favorite?
I wouldn't. It's like picking a favorite child, right? I can't get in trouble here on the radio. But there are some that are really unique in their approach and in their audience. One of the most impactful garden projects we have, it's actually sponsored and owned by the Franklin County Board of Commissioners. It's the International Harvest Garden. It's the largest community garden in the county. The property is about 6 acres. We have about 4 acres under cultivation. And it is to help new Americans, refugee groups, give them a plot of land where they can grow what they grew up growing in their country. And so you go there and you see different vegetables and food items than you would normally see growing in an Ohio garden. Even some of the crops that you recognize, they grow differently, like corn. They grow corn to dry it, and so they don't harvest their corn until way late in the fall or early winter. And the first year that I saw that, I thought, wait, what's going on here? Why'd you leave this corn? And they dry it down, so they grind it. We have Burmese, Chin, groups from Somalia, several different ethnicities, all gardening together as communities, and the master gardeners, you know, helping them, managing the garden, teaching them, you know, proper cultural techniques and learning from them about different crops. We have gardens that, you know, help with horticultural therapy. I mean, research has shown, we all know that the many benefits of gardening, but the mental health aspects of gardening are incredibly impactful and important. And we have two horticultural therapy projects, one that targets adults with developmental delays, and another one that targets senior citizen living center, where some folks have memory issues. And those programs are so impactful. You know, a lot of people think the Master Gardener program is all about gardening or plants mm-hmm. or soil, mm-hmm. and it really isn't. It's first and foremost a volunteer program, and it's about people. It's about developing leaders. It's about developing communities. It's about helping people. And the tool we use is gardening, much like our 4-H youth development program. Everybody thinks it's about a steer or a pie or a rocket, and it's not. It's about developing a child, and the tool is whatever they choose to do, whether that's a steer or a pig or a baking or a sewing project.
Okay, yeah. And another interesting part of your organization, the Franklin County Master Gardeners, have a helpline, which is, I mean, I didn't know this, and now I know, and it seems like a very helpful thing for the community. Can you tell me about that, the helpline?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to let Karen talk about it, because Karen actually manages it for us.
Karen, you manage the helpline. Yeah. All right, yes, what do you do?
So we are there 2 days a week, and we will answer emails and phone calls that come in. Or if you want to come into the office, you can come into the extension office on Carmack, and we will try to look at the problem you're having or talk to you.
So if maybe they'll send you pictures and be like, why are my hostas dying?
Yes, pictures are essential in helping us to mm-hmm. diagnose. So our email address is FCMG. So think of Franklin County Master Gardener. Mm-hmm. So FCMG@osu.edu.
Okay.
We're in there on Mondays from noon to 3, and we're in there on Fridays from 9 a.m. to noon. So if you send us an email at 1 o'clock on Monday, it may not get answered until Friday, but it will be answered. Hmm. And so through the we have it here at countywide. I also do it at the state level, where we answer questions from throughout the state. We are offered in that continuing education, so we'd go to diagnostic clinics. They've just announced where we'll have diagnostic clinics that we can go to help us learn how to diagnose your problems.
Wow. All right. Well, we are going to let our listeners participate now. You know, it's not a Monday or a Friday, so we're going to have you. And we're going to open up our phone lines, and we have three Master Gardeners here to answer your questions, because this panel is going to stay with us for the rest of the hour, and we'd love to hear some gardening questions from our listeners. So that's 614-292-8513. You can also send us an email at allsides@wosu.org, but we'd love to have your calls, 614-292-8513. We'll be back in just a minute. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
You You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Master gardeners don't only help the community. They know a thing or two about home gardens as well. What's in season? What is that weird plant in the corner of my lawn? How do I stop the weeds from taking over? Gardens are complicated living environments, and they create a lot of questions. I'm here with three master gardeners. Mike Hogan, Extension Educator for Agriculture and Natural Resources and Associate Professor at Ohio State University. Mike is also the coordinator of the Master Gardener Volunteer Program in Franklin County. Thanks again for being here, Mike.
Absolutely.
And then we have Karen Minnendorf and Kathy Watson, two Ohio State Master Gardeners. And listeners, I would love for you to join us right now. Ask those gardening questions. This is your chance. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or send us an email to allsides@wosu.org. Again, that's 614-292-8513. So, Karen, what is the most common question that you get asked in your whenever people call you on your helpline?
This time of year, we're getting a lot of questions about the grass, about your lawns. The drought last year had a lot of effect on the grass that's growing now this year. So we get questions about the lawns. We'll get questions about invasive insects. We get questions about what is this plant, because you'll have things that grow up in your garden that you don't know what it is.
It just popped up in the spring.
Yeah, it just popped up. How did it get here? So it's a lot of plant identification.
Do you use an app to identify the plants, or can you identify most of them from people's pictures?
I have an app that we can use to help identify. Some things you know what it is when you see it.
Yeah.
And the more that we do the diagnosis on the different plants and pictures that people send us, then the more you start to learn and you can remember. And you don't have to look it up. But if we don't know, we can just type it in and research it. As Mike mentioned earlier, everything is based on scientific research. So when we look it up, we always type in, okay, what's this brown leaf? Why are my leaves turning brown? .university.edu. And then I can get all the research-based questions as opposed to
Just random Google. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Okay.
So everything is research based.
And Mike, this this helpline, has it been around for a while? Is that something all Master Gardener programs do, or is it unique to you?
No, most county Master Gardener programs have some form of a helpline. You know, it used to be in person based. You come on Mondays when we're there. Certainly, it has evolved as technology evolved. The pandemic really changed it. We went to doing it at home, and since then, we get very few. Most of our traffic comes that way, either electronically or by telephone, email or phone. Few people visit in person. The only time they do that, if they want to bring a sample in, an insect or a sick plant or something like that. It's been around in Franklin County for a long time. It predates me, so it's been around at least 14 years. And most of our county programs have some iteration of a helpline.
And we have Mary on the line, Mary from Columbus. What is your question for our master gardeners?
I have some bare soil, bare ground, and part shade, part sun, and I am looking for a perennial ground cover or flowering, low maintenance as possible, that will absorb rainwater.
Okay, let's see what they have. Do you have any suggestions for her?
So that is a real challenging task or environment because of a couple of reasons. Not so much the shade, Mary, but the environment. You know, if it's a large mature tree, you may not have a lot of topsoil. You have the roots that have grown to the top of the soil. So that's sometime our first challenge. There are some ground covers. You know, Pachysandra is one that spreads. English ivy, it spreads and almost can be invasive. There are some cultivars of phlox that will tolerate shade conditions more so than some others. But the problem for most of the areas that the kind of situation you're talking about gets to be the amount of topsoil, the quality of the topsoil, the evenness of the topsoil, around roots of a large mature tree. You know, you can go online and look for, you can either go to our Bastard Gardener site, you can go to any other university site and look for plants that survive in the shade. We have a fact sheet, if you want to send us an email, we have a fact sheet on different types of shade-loving plants, everything from ground covers to annuals to shrubs, woody ornamentals, that you can select for low sunlight situations. And so if you want to email me, it's Hogan.1, Hogan.1@osu.edu, or just send it to the helpline email that Karen mentioned, fcmg@osu.edu, and we can get you a PDF of that fact sheet, and you can look through it. And then what we suggest is take that fact sheet to a garden center or a nursery and look at some of the plants and see if there's something you like. Many times someone picks a plant off a list, and then after they have it for a season or two, they're like, I don't like it very much, it's too invasive. So we always tell folks to actually, you know, don't just trust lists and photos in a book or online. Go to the nursery and look and feel and smell the plants and see if it's something that you're going to want to have in your situation.
Listeners, you can join us. Ask us your gardening questions, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And I'm looking here at your list. You also offer some other resources, including soil testing. So you were just talking about the soil. In general, we here in Ohio, do we have pretty good soil? Or... tell me about soil testing, I guess.
We do. Yeah, we offer soil testing. Most extension offices through OSU extension offices throughout Ohio offer some type of soil testing. We offer soil testing. It's $15 a sample, a test. You only have to test your soil once every 3 years in most situations, so it's not a very expensive proposition. We do it year-round. You can test your soil any time of the year as long as it's dry and you can get a sample. But we get lots of Franklin County residents who utilize our soil testing. Many times when folks have a plant health issue, they want to first think about nutrients. Are we getting enough nutrients? How much should they fertilize? You know, there's a big question that comes into the helpline. You know, how much should I fertilize my tomatoes or my sweet corn in my garden? Well, we can tell you about how much we think you should fertilize, but we don't know what's in your soil. And so the best thing to do is to get a soil test to give us a baseline of what you have. The nice part about soil testing through us is we get a copy of the results from the lab and you get one. So if you're a first-time soil tester or you have a question or you've changed the crop you want to plant, you can call us and we can be looking online at the results of your soil test and help you solve that problem.
Okay. Now, Karen and Kathy, we both talked about your favorite gardens that you have worked in, and you both mentioned vegetable gardens. You know, Kathy, you're busy with 82 beds over there, and Karen, you're busy with all the kids. But non-vegetable gardens, have you worked in gardens that are just pretty?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
So I think I mentioned before, I'm also a OSU Chadwick Arboretum volunteer, mm-hmm. and there's lots of different kinds of volunteer opportunities there, but one of my favorite things is what we call the cultivar trials. Mm-hmm. And what that is that seed companies either send us seeds or small plugs to grow up into flowers in the greenhouse. And then probably in about another week, we mm-hmm. will be planting those flowers into the ground. And the whole purpose of the cultivar trials is to see what do these flowers look like here? And that kind of translates to what they might look like in your yard. And so they're really testing maybe new varieties of flowers or new and improved types of, and these are annual flowers, to see how they do in a normal garden here in Columbus, Ohio. And so we plant them, take care of them, but we also evaluate them. So once a month, we go through and look at every single plant and evaluate on a score of 1 to 5 how we think they are doing, five being the best and 1 being the worst. And at that end of the year, all those statistics are posted on the website for Chadwick Arboretum. So if you're interested in petunia, what petunias did really well last year in the cultivar trials, you can look that up and then find them in the nursery.
So if you don't have a really green thumb like me, you can go and pick all the fives and you have a better chance.
Right.
Or if you kill them, then you know you're just really not good at this.
And the public can go out and in the middle of the summer, it's beautiful because they're all full of color and anybody can come out to the garden and take a look at them and see for themselves what would work for their own home.
Yeah. Karen, what about you? Non-vegetable gardens that you work in?
If I had the time to get to them, I'd like the Heritage vintage garden at the Governor's Mansion.
Oh, okay.
I don't get to go there very often because I have other commitments. They meet on Wednesday mornings, and I have other commitments. So I don't get to go there anywhere near as often as I wish that I could go. But they have several, I believe it is seven different growing sites that represent the state of Ohio within there at the Heritage Garden.
Oh, wow. Is this open to the public or is it just...
You can do tours.
Okay, you have to schedule a tour.
Yes, you can schedule a tour.
Okay, yeah, I haven't heard of this. So, yeah, so Master Gardeners are taking care of the Governor's Gardens. Okay.
Along with their other volunteers from there, but yes, Master Gardeners.
All right. We have Glenn in Columbus, and Glenn, what would you like to talk about?
Hi. I was wondering what exactly was being learned in at OSU or in general about medicinal herbs or healthy eating, basically like eating from your garden, from your own backyard.
Okay, we will we'll take that up. So what do you think about medicinal herbs and growing them in your backyard?
Well, you know, it's not just, Glenn had a great question, not just about medicinal herbs, but food and, you know, nutraceuticals. As a society, we've really learned pretty recently in the last 20 years that food is important for a lot more than nutrition, you know, not a lot more than sustenance. And we have what's really neat at Waterman Farm, which is a 261 acre farm in the city limits of Columbus. No other land grant university in the country has a working farm connected to their university in a major urban area like Columbus. We have over the last probably 10 or 15 years had research projects with the OSU College of Medicine, with the James Cancer Hospital, where they're looking at the nutritional benefits of fresh, eating more fresh, unprocessed fruits, vegetables, herbs, and also how some of those foods that we grow can have a positive effect on our health. Looking at, you know, in tomatoes, for example, lycopene. And that science is really, it's been going on for a while, but it's really still, I would say, in the budding stage. You know, I think, you know, I don't know when, 30, 40 years from now, people will probably look back at how we treated certain conditions, maybe like cancer, and will be aghast that we use chemicals to fight cancers when there are natural properties in certain foodstuffs that will help suppress those genes that cause some certain cancers and other medical challenges. So it's a fascinating area where science and gardening, you know, have this nexus. And, you know, we have great partnerships here at OSU, where we are one of the few universities that has all of the health science colleges here with College of Agriculture and the Environment and a College of Engineering. And all of those colleges are working together on how do we, you know, use food to address human health.
Yeah. And I'm guessing, Kathy and Karen, you both, since you work with growing fruits and vegetables with children and at the Ross Heart Hospital, you talk a lot about eating more healthy foods.
Yes.
I mean, besides all of this research going on, just if people ate, you need to eat more veggies, right? Right.
Well, with our spin gardens at the end of the year, we have a little party and everything is made. So we make our dips from like a Greek yogurt. And we'll use something else to flavor that as opposed to buying a more calorie-laden dressing to use as a dip. We'll make pizza using peppers as the crust, and then you can put your sauce. So we try to make more healthy foods to show the children you can have snacks, you can have sweets, you can have things, but they're healthy.
They don't let me use ranch dressing anymore, Amy. I want to dip my vegetables in ranch dressing. And every
what kind of Midwesterner are you?
Yeah. So many of our, not just our youth projects, almost every one of our community garden projects kind of has added the nutrition component. Sometimes, like Karen says, at the end of the season, the harvest, even our Ross garden, we do that. But I can't think of a food garden project we have that doesn't incorporate nutrition at some point of the year.
All right, we have Alan on the line. Alan in Clintonville, what's your question?
For probably 15 years, I've had a group of pachysandra intertwined in my vinca in my front yard, probably a 15 by 15 foot strip of it. Lost them all last winter or, you know, this spring or whatever. Was it the cold weather? I mean, we've had cold weather before, but I can't believe it. I've lost them all.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that it was probably, I doubt it's the cold weather, Alan. We had not had historic cold temperatures this past year, even though we had some low temperatures. We are seeing a lot this year of plants that did not make it through the winter. And a lot of it's related to the drought that we had last summer. You know, Karen mentioned that we get a lot of lawn questions and lawn issues due to that. But we're also seeing that in other plants. I just had an issue with a line of arborvitae shrubs that were planted last year. Pretty good size, not very small. And, they are totally orange today. And, we looked at them. There's no evidence of insect or disease. And it has to be environmental or cultural. And I really think there's a lot of plants out there that didn't make it through the winter simply because of the lack of moisture last summer. And you couple that with the high heat, too. The ground covers you mentioned, they are not, they don't have deep tap roots. So they would be particularly affected by a lack of moisture in the growing season.
If he would have watered them all of July, maybe with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
If he hasn't, he's had them for 15 years and never had to water them. But
right,
yeah,
and that's a great point. You know, even people don't think about that. We have to water trees and shrubs, woody ornamentals, our foundation plantings along our houses. Typically, we don't. They are large enough. They have deep enough tap roots that they can get moisture from even the subsoil when we have a lack of precipitation. But when we have those droughty conditions, we have to water things that normally we wouldn't have to water. And those are good examples, like ground covers, but especially things like arborvitae and other boxwoods and other woody shrubs that we think that don't require a lot of care in a normal year.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We have three master gardeners with us this hour. And listeners, we're going to take a brief break, but you can give us a call and join us at 614-292-8513 or email us a question at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, the master gardeners will stay with us and answer your questions. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Spring brings with it a lot of changes. The flowers of the season are gorgeous, but what about all those weeds? And we love the herbs and veggies in our garden, but what about all those pesky flies and bugs bothering us? Not to mention the squirrels. Well, here to help us with some of these problems are master gardeners. Still with us is Mike Hogan with the OSU Extension Office, and he is also the coordinator of the Master Gardener Volunteer Program in Franklin County. We also have Karen Minnendorf and Kathy Watson, two OSU Master Gardeners and volunteers. And listeners, you can join us, 614-292-8513. We have Kyle from Hilliard on the line. What's your question?
Hi there. I am going into my fourth year starting a small farm in Hilliard doing lavender. And I've often wondered, does OSU have any kind of extension where somebody would come out to a small farm and do like an evaluation to see what could be done better or anything like that?
We do. That's hard for us to schedule just because there are the population is so big in our area, but we do that. And shoot me an email, Kyle, at hogan.1@osu.edu. We have a special program we do called Master Urban Farmer, where we train folks who want to be urban growers and or develop urban food-based businesses. And we certainly do farm visits on occasion, and we'll try to work you in. So just send me an email, hogan.1@osu.edu. I will I'll admit up front, I'm not a lavender expert, but certainly be glad to work with you. And the nice part about the Master Gardener Volunteer Program and OSU Extension in general is we all can't be experts about everything related to agriculture and horticulture, but we have colleagues. And here at OSU, we have literally thousands of colleagues that we can depend upon, and I'm sure we have someone who has expertise with lavender.
We also have an email from Valerie in Columbus. She says that her mom has 40 acres of land behind her house, and she found out that there's a contract to put up a solar farm, like solar panels, near that area. So she wondered if her mom needs to worry if those solar panels will affect her garden.
No, obviously you wouldn't want them very close, but it's kind of a contentious issue. You know, folks worry about are we taking prime farmland in Ohio, particularly out of production to generate alternative energy. And there's a lot of research now on incorporating plants into solar arrays. Between the rows, there's some research going on and some trials where including livestock in those, planting forages that livestock can graze. And so I wouldn't be too concerned that those solar arrays are close to a garden type of thing at all.
Okay. Karen, I'm sure that, working the Master Gardener hotline and taking calls, I'm sure people call you about weeds fairly often. Mm-hmm. What is your go-to advice for people who have a weed problem and they can't get rid of it?
The best thing to do is don't let it go to flower. Mm-hmm. I would recommend cutting it off. If you pull it and you leave some of the roots down there, it's still going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like using chemicals. I mean, you can spray it. That'll get rid of it too, but I don't like using chemicals. Mm-hmm. But if you cut it off, it's not getting the sun to do the photosynthesis. So it might take a little while before you finally kill it, but eventually it will die off. But just cut it off at the ground. You don't have to pull it. Mm-hmm. Don't let it go to flower. By the same token, I was just talking with someone earlier this morning about thistle.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, they get awfully beautiful flowers. And the bees love them.
Yeah.
So can you tolerate the dandelions in your yard so that the bees can have them? Or can you tolerate some thistle, the flowers, so that the bees would have those and the other pollinators? But cut it off at the ground so it doesn't get that photosynthesis.
Okay. I can tolerate the dandelions and even thistle. I'll leave that alone, but I have a poison ivy issue. Ooh. Yeah, right? What do I do there? Do I cut it off?
I would research on that one.
Okay.
I would have to do a little bit of research, but you can cut it off. Are you allergic to it?
I never used to be. A few years ago, I was able to pull a bunch out and I didn't get anything, but last year it got me and I got a little itchy.
I would be leery. Personally, for me, I might hire someone to come do that because I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, I don't want to deal with it.
If you cut everything off, don't let it flower. Don't let it grow. Photosynthesis. It might take a while.
Yeah. I thought I got it all last year, but I did pull it, so I'm sure I didn't.
Left some of the roots?
Yes, I did. I thought I did such a good job. Oh, I failed. All right. And Nicole in Worthington. Oh, you have the same question. Look at that, Nicole. Go ahead.
I'm pro dandelions in the yard, so I am generally try to avoid spraying if I can, but the poison ivy in my front yard is starting to encroach on my urban strawberry patch. So I'm just wondering, any suggestions for how to pull it out without getting it on myself, because I do have a reaction to it when I am exposed.
Well, Karen makes a really good point. Continued defoliation will not allow that. Pulling it out, cutting it. If you keep doing that over and over, eventually the plant can't survive, right? Just like Karen said, it can't photosynthesize. So, if you can clip it safely, using gloves, putting a long sleeve shirt on, when you're out, and keep doing that. As soon as it pops up, do that again. Now, poison ivy is one. Poison hemlock. We have an amazing, terrible burgeoning poison hemlock problem in Franklin County and Columbus. Poison ivy is just like that, not nearly as poisonous to some people. But in those instances, I recommend that we consider, if you're able, to use a chemical, a contact herbicide. And sometimes you only have to do that once. You hit it with a contact herbicide that contains glyphosate. You can get it at any garden center this time of year. You can get it at the grocery store as well as the big box stores. And then see what regrows. And if it starts to regrow, you know, pull those small regrowths out. You don't have to keep applying the chemical if applying a herbicide is a concern.
And she said it was encroaching on her strawberries. So if we use the chemical like away from the strawberries, just right on the poison ivy, it should be okay.
Correct. Most contact herbicides, you want to have a contact herbicide containing the active ingredient is called glyphosate. You may recognize Roundup as one trade name, not that we promote that. But that contact herbicide only works on green plants that it comes in contact with. So as long as you don't spray on a windy day, even if you want to shield your strawberries, sometimes when I'm spraying around some sensitive crops, I'll take a very large piece of cardboard, like from a large cardboard box, and shield the strawberries and spray the Roundup if it's very close. As long as you don't get that contact herbicide on the strawberry foliage, it's not going to affect those desirable plants. It doesn't move in the soil. It doesn't attack the roots. It only goes through the foliage.
And we have Julie in Delaware. Julie, what's your question?
I have quite a few rows of Sharon bushes. I've had them for many years, but just in the last 2 years, they have created an innumerable number of pups. How do I control that?
Do you know what? We're not sure what you said. Are you saying a bunch of tufts or what? Can you explain
pups,
what you mean?
Pups? Pups, little leaves everywhere, growing in the grass, growing in the walkway, growing everywhere. They're just growing everywhere.
Okay, it's out of control. Yeah. What do you know about that? Yeah.
They're going to grow up again. You can either cut them off. The plant is growing. It's starting to spread out. Might be. Are you having any problems with the other existing plants?
Oh yeah, she's gone now. I'm sorry.
I was just thinking, pretend. Yeah, if you have sometimes if it's starting to have problems, it might be sending out roots elsewhere that are trying to come up to grow, because that plant might be suffering a little bit.
Mm.
But you can either cut them off, keep trimming them back. It would be what I would do.
She did mention that the plants had been there for a while. And like Karen said, a lot of times when they start hitting subsoil, they don't have as good a soil. It's more or compacted soil. Then they'll start to what we call sucker more. And that's the pups, as she called them. I mean, we call that suckering. The best thing to do is, again, just keep cutting those. Most plants, we don't want to use a herbicide on those. Depending on the age of the plant, you might get away with it in certain plants, but we don't recommend that because those plants are connected to the vascular system of the plant. And depending on what you sprayed, you could harm the plant, not just the suckers. It'd be like spraying a branch, an above ground branch of the plant. So continued removal by hand is the best thing.
So, Kathy, whenever you do your work, when's the best time to garden? Is it first thing in the morning? Is it in the evening after the sun starts to go down? When do you like to do your work?
Well, especially when it starts to get warmer, we say morning's the best because it's just too hot in the midday, or in the evenings too are good times to garden. That's the most popular ones for volunteers for sure.
And Karen, do you feel like with watering all of the gardens, people always ask that where they're like, I want to water right after I get home from work. But I've heard tales that morning is better.
Morning is the better time to do your watering. Excuse me. That way it would have more time. It can take in more of the water into the plant, gives the plant time to dry in case you got any of that water on the leaves. If the sun would go down, that is a good way to get some disease into your plant. So if you can water in the morning, water at ground level, not above the plant.
Don't soak the whole plant.
No. Because that's where your disease can come in, because it'll sit there on the leaves and then everything. That's how your disease will come in. So water at ground level, best in the morning is for watering.
Okay.
except for the lawn, we really don't want to do any overhead watering of any crops. Ornamental crops, even annuals, your geraniums, begonias, our vegetable crops, there's really no benefit to running an overhead sprinkler. The most efficient way to water is, even at different times of the day, if you can't do it in the morning, is to use either a soaker hose, a drip irrigation system. They make nice little systems you can buy for small gardens and raised beds now. But you want to water the soil, not the plants. There's very little benefit to getting the foliage wet.
Okay. And we have time for one more question. Rebecca in Columbus, what's your question?
Hi. I moved into my home about 4 years ago, and I have several raised beds, but I have some surface beds as well. And in one of them, I have a pretty virulent, I believe the plant is called mugwort. I've looked it up on the plant scanning app. It is very virulent. I am 4 years into doing all of the things that you're suggesting today. Cardboard, I've done preen, I've tried glyphosate, I've pulled and pulled and pulled, and it just without fail comes back every spring, and it becomes my entire summer little project is pulling mugwort. So I was curious if you knew anything about mugwort and if you had any suggestions.
All right. Thank you, Rebecca.
Not totally familiar with that plant, but I'm guessing it's a wildflower. If it's actually a wort in that group of plants. You say you've tried to smother it with cardboard. You know, you might want to try what we call solarizing, where you take a tarp, a dark colored tarp, not a clear plastic type of thing, and solarize the area. You cover the area where you're having this weed problem, hold it down with bricks or logs or whatever, leave it there for as long as you can stand it. I don't know if it's in your front lawn or somewhere else on the property. That will kill plants. If you can, sometimes the best, depending on the plant, the best time to do it is in late summer, and leave the tarp down if you can stand it until spring. That will kill most plants. It kills some weed seeds in the very top of the soil. It's not going to kill all the seeds, weed seeds or any seeds in the soil, but it will kill some in the very top. But that might be one approach if you've tried others. I'm surprised a contact herbicide hasn't helped. I wonder if it's just more seeds in the soil, because contact herbicides are not going to do anything. You know, they work through hitting a plant's leaves, foliage. They're not going to do anything for seeds in the soil. So I'm wondering if you just have seed bank in the soil so much that you just keep getting new plants pop up every year.
Hmm. All right. Well, I want to thank our guest today for joining us. And Mike, can you remind us one more time, if someone has been convinced from this hour that they want to become a master gardener, how do they apply?
Yeah, the best. We have three meetings this summer. We ask you that you have to attend an orientation meeting to get an application. We have our meetings start in June, but just send me an email. I can send you the flyer. We have a meeting. We have meetings in the day. We have meetings in the evening. We do a drive home timing of a meeting, one each in June, July, and August. So send an email to hogan.1@osu.edu. hogan.1@osu.edu.
All right. Thank you for joining us, Mike Hogan, Extension Educator for Agricultural and Natural Resources at Ohio State University. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And Karen Minnendorf, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Kathy Watson, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Both OSU Master Gardeners. I'm Amy Jurevich. This has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.